Well, I thought after a number of weeks that we spent in Gospels and Ephesians and Epistles, especially Ephesians, I thought maybe it'd be time for us to spend some time in the Old Testament. Then I looked at the Old Testament story and thought, do I really want to do this? And said, yes. Maybe I don't want to, but I think this is where we need to be. And so we're going to be talking about David for the next few weeks, I think. And the story of David is a fascinating one, as we all know. Talked about them, we've had them read for us. There's the story of Goliath, there's David's struggle with Saul, there's his relationship with Jonathan that sort of transcends political difficulties. There's all kinds of good stuff there. And then we come to 2 Samuel 11. And what do we do with this? Well, there's some interesting things for us to think about here. And one of the things I was pushed to think about is, what does it mean to be in a position where you can, at least from a human perspective, reasonably think that you're not accountable to anyone, that you are, in fact, autonomous? That's where the sermon title comes from, autonomous with a question mark. Originally, it was going to be autonomous, not all it's cracked up to be, but then I thought, well, we'll go with this one. And so here we have David, someone who has reached the pinnacle of his abilities, the pinnacle of anyone's abilities. He's a king. Kings were different then than they are now. Currently, kings and queens, particularly in constitutional monarchies like we have with Queen Elizabeth, are dramatically different. Kings could do sort of whatever they wanted, so could queens when they were there. There weren't as many as kings, of course, but there are certainly some. And they'd reached this point where they were responsible to no one. At least that's what they thought. And so here's David. It's an interesting story for lots of reasons, not least of which because we read from the very beginning, right in verse 1, that David now doesn't just think he's above sort of the usual things. He's above even the responsibilities of a king. In this translation, it says, in the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with the king's men and the whole Israelite army. Why didn't David go? We don't know for sure, but I suspect it's because he didn't want to. One of the responsibilities of a king back then was not to stay in the back and direct battles as much as it was to make sure that everything happened and frequently lead from the front. That was one of the expectations. Not always. Sometimes the men themselves, as we see earlier in David's story, sent him to the back and said, look, we don't want to risk you. But still, here's David not doing what he's supposed to. And it's a bit of a hint, a bit of foreshadowing about where this story is going to take us. So we have David, he's wandering around on the roof of his house, which is probably normal, enjoying the cool of the evening perhaps. Looks over and he sees a woman taking a bath, which is also quite normal. When I was younger, I thought this was some weird salacious thing. No, that's just where you took baths here on the roof because it was convenient. Because then when you were done with the water, you went other places where it could be useful. It was just the way of the world. Bathsheba wasn't doing anything unusual, neither was David. It was the two together where unusual began to happen because David looked over and saw a beautiful woman. And then it all fell apart. He asks somebody to find out who it is. He finds out, oh, it's Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, whoever that is, the wife of Uriah the Hittite. Well, we know who Uriah the Hittite is. If we read further on, Uriah the Hittite is one of the mighty men of David. One of his prime warriors, one of his commanders, someone of tremendous value to David. So David, of course, said, well, I hope they have a good marriage and moved on with his life. And no, he didn't. And messengers over to Bathsheba said, hey, come on over to my place. And then it just went downhill from there. We have David faced with this unwanted pregnancy, decides the best thing to do is to get Uriah to come, work it out in such a way that Uriah will think this is his child, and David is no doubt hoping it doesn't look anything like him. Uriah, being a better man than David, let's be honest, refuses. David then takes what I think is probably the easiest way out and just has Uriah killed. Somebody once described this story as one of the most repugnant of a series of repugnant events. There's something interesting about the Bible, different than most other sacred texts from the ancient world. The heroes aren't portrayed as being faultless. We get this sense of real human beings. And in this case, what we get is somebody who has reached the point where he feels he can do whatever he wants. Obviously, he felt some kind of a twinge of conscience because he tried to cover his tracks, but not enough to keep him from subsequently killing Uriah. So what do we do with David? One of the things I was realizing that this is a cautionary tale for us. And you might be thinking, well, how could that be? I'm not a king, I'm not a queen. Well, a friend of mine wrote a book about how we are kings and queens. And so I said, what do you mean, kings and queens? We're not kings and queens. He said, well, think about it for a moment. Think back to when we had kings and queens where it really meant something. So not even the last couple of hundred years, but before that. Think of the power they had. Think of the power you have that dwarfs theirs. So what are you talking about? Well, think about it. In my lifetime, I've traveled further than any ancient king or queen. I've been to more places, and I don't even travel that much. But I have an airplane to help me to do that when I need one. I just go and buy a ticket. And I can go places that were completely out of reach. Everybody who has a smartphone or a computer with an internet connection has access to more information than anyone ever had in the ancient world and most of the medieval world. There's a story, I don't know if it's true or not, but people suspect that John Milton, the poet, was the last person who read everything that was published. Which was possible back then because we weren't publishing hundreds and thousands of books a week like we are now. And it's still obviously not true. I don't think he had any acquaintance with Chinese writing or Japanese writing, which are both perfectly literate cultures, or any other place. But as far as sort of the, if you have a Eurocentric view, we think John Milton had read everything that anyone had written. He still didn't have as much information as you do every time you take out your phone. The power we have is amazing. Now, we don't have the power over life and death the same way those kings did, so it's not exactly the same. But we have this tremendous power. And with power comes an ongoing temptation that David gave into, to this idea of autonomy. This idea that says that I am all that matters. I'm the one who decides what's good and bad for me. Now, obviously, nobody is completely that way, because that's a kind of mental illness. But we really move in that direction, where we think, I get to decide, just like David did. Because David had options that he didn't take, because he thought, this is just me, this is what I want, so I'm going to do it. And that's the same kind of thing that we are tempted to do even today. Probably not about things like David did, but all of us, I suspect, have had moments when we have done something that we know we shouldn't. We have looked at the speed limit sign and said, well, I'm just going to drive faster than that because I'm in a hurry. And my hurry is more important than that sign. Now, we probably don't say it quite that way, but that's exactly what our actions are saying, is that we and our needs transcend that sign. And most of the time, we get away with it. Sometimes we do it by accident. Sometimes we do actually look at it and say, yeah, I know that's what it is, but I'm going to be late otherwise. I just have to go. And as I said, most of the time we get away with it. Hardly ever does it cause us real problems. Sometimes we get a ticket. But the difficulty with saying that I get to decide is that it then presumes and actually requires that I know everything, which I do not. And I don't know how many of you drive, and if you drive, if you've ever had this experience, but I know I have, where you're approaching a bend in the road, a curve of some kind, and there's a sign, a yellow and black sign there that says, you should go this fast. You should go 70 kilometers an hour through this curve, and I look at it and go, are you kidding? Don't even take it off cruise control, perhaps, or whatever else might be going on. And have you ever had that moment when you realize, no, that's a little faster than I should be going through this corner? Nothing happens, nothing catastrophic, but you just have that feeling that your car, whatever it is just on the edge. Why is that? I'm not going to talk about the physics. It happens because you've looked at that sign and said, you know more than the civil engineer who said that's how fast you should go around this bend in the road. But you didn't. You didn't. So you said, I don't have to pay attention to that sign. No sign is the boss of me. And if you would have been going a little bit faster, you might have gone for a little roll in the ditch. because you just said, I don't have to pay attention to that. There are always consequences when we start doing things that we shouldn't do. The problem is we are freed from so many of those consequences that it's easy for us to fall into this idea that there are never consequences. That people don't know better than we do. But sometimes they do. Sometimes it's simple physics, like a road sign. Sometimes it's a little more complex. It's the way human beings work. It's about responsibility and loyalty and ethics and all of these things. And if we are the only people who make any of those decisions, the chances of us getting them right all the time are pretty slim. Because we don't know everything. Our ability to take one of these and look up anything we want in the world on any topic fools us into thinking that we know enough about everything when we just don't. What could David have done there? David was doing just what everybody did. Walking around on your roof was perfectly normal. Bathsheba was doing what everybody did. Taking a bath was perfectly normal. It was the connection that began the problem. Was David somehow required from that moment on to eventually father an illegitimate child? No, of course he wasn't. But if David stood there on this roof and said, I think I might be interested in that, and just continued on, then it did become inevitable. But it became inevitable because David didn't do anything about it. What do you think would have happened if David, king as he was, would have said to one of his guards even, or one of his advisors, said, I think I'm going to sleep with Uriah's wife. What do you think of that? Do you think they would have said that's a good idea? Now, they might have been very careful about what they said, because he was the king, after all. But I'd be very surprised if they would have said, yeah, you should do that. What if David would have sought counsel there? Advice, asked a question, floated the notion. And when somebody said, that's not a very good idea, would he have still continued on? Well, perhaps he would have. But perhaps he might not have. It might have been enough to take him off that precipice that was leading him to this avalanche that ended up in catastrophe for everyone involved. And what if he would have just, instead of talking to people then, when he found out that Bathsheba was pregnant, instead said, what are we going to do now? How am I going to somehow make this right? What do I do? I better talk to Uriah and begin by apologizing for taking advantage of my authority, my power. Because Bathsheba, I've read some people trying to make Bathsheba somehow complicit in this, and I can't think of anything more ridiculous than somebody saying to the king, no, you can't come near me. It just doesn't work that way. Would it have been possible for David to suddenly realize what he's done and do the right thing, own up to his responsibility? Would he have burst into flames when he did that? Would God have struck him dead? Would he have died of embarrassment? No, none of those things would have happened. We don't know what would have happened because he didn't. He said, I better hide this. And that didn't work either. And he still could have backed down at that point. It would have been increasingly embarrassing the longer you leave these things, the increasingly humiliating. Let's not kid ourselves. This would have been a real blow. But it would have been so much more of a blow than eventually being found out that you had one of your commanders arrange the murder of another one of your commanders to hide something that was fundamentally unhideable. David could have changed a lot of things there, but not when David was depending entirely on himself. Not when David thought, I'm not accountable to anybody. Not when David thought, I don't have to be part of any community about anything that I want. And that's where we're like David. Because that's what we can think as well. Probably not about something as, repugnant is not too strong a word as this. But those other things we do, those ethical envelopes we're just willing to bend a little bit, those decisions we make that really are to our own best interests at the expense of someone else, those are the kinds of things that if we just do them ourselves, often end up doing those very things. But when was the last time you talked to somebody in your circle, your family, friends, your faith community, this church, wherever it might be, about something that was a little on the edge, and they said, oh yeah, you should do that? When was the last time you said, you know, I did this bad thing, and I should really go and apologize to the person, try and make it right? And they said, no, you shouldn't, that's dumb. No. We have wisdom in the community that we're in, but only if we identify and move into the reality that we are in a community. The community isn't perfect. The community isn't all wise, but it's certainly wiser than we are, because a group of people always knows more than an individual person. Now, there are some things that I know more about than anyone I'm likely to be around, but not everything. If David would have reached out to the community he was part of, the leader, yeah, he was the leader of the community, of course, but if he would have been willing to reach out to them, would he have ended up where he ended up? I suppose it's possible, but I don't think so. And that's what I was thinking of when I was thinking of this whole idea of being autonomous. Because first of all, autonomy is an illusion. The myth of the self-made person is one of the most aggravating myths that we have these days. It drives me crazy every time I hear about it. I mean, it's just so flagrantly untrue. And then people use this untruth as if they're somehow all-powerful and all these other kinds of directions. We see this kind of thing most frequently these days in the high-tech world. And so you have these entrepreneurs who have made billions of dollars selling our private information to somebody else when it comes right down to it. But nevertheless, they're very wealthy, they're fairly clever, and they somehow think, well, I have a lot of money, and I'm quite clever over here, so I'm going to explain how to fix education, maybe healthcare. Have you listened to any of the nonsense that these people are coming up with? It's absurd, because they're outside of their area of expertise. I don't tell Mark how to run Facebook, although I would like to. But I'm not going to listen to him tell me how education works, because he doesn't have a clue, and he's demonstrated he doesn't have a clue. Some of his ideas are absurd. Being good in one thing doesn't mean you're good in everything. So when you run across things you're not good at, you can just double down on it and make them worse, like David did. Or you can say to somebody, I'm really not good at this. What do I do next? Does that somehow diminish you as a person? Does that somehow take away your autonomy? Well, it can't, because you don't have autonomy already. I mean, you've got personal autonomy. We're not talking about that. There isn't this bubble that only you live in that has no connection anywhere else. I know lots of people who are good at lots of things, but I've never met anybody who's good at everything. What I find interesting is that most of the people I know who are good at lots of things, not just shockingly good at one thing, but that are quite good at lots of things, they're the people who are always asking for help. Because they know how much there is to know, because they know a lot, and they know there's so much more beyond it. That's where this becomes a cautionary tale. This is where this story becomes of value to us, because it reminds us that when we just make decisions on our own, they cannot always be great. Sometimes they're really awful. And one of the ways to avoid that is not never making another decision, because that's also impossible, but it's to involve the people in your community, to give up this illusion of autonomy, to give up this idea that reaching out to someone else somehow makes you weak, or somehow diminishes you in any way, because it doesn't. And to realize that God has placed you in a community so that you might do everything you were created to be and to do. Because that's where we learn. We learn in the company of others. We get better in the company of others. We grow in the company of others, whether it's our family or whether it's our friends or whether it's our church or our neighborhood. When we reach out to people and let them reach out to us, we all get better. We make better decisions. We become better people. We'll talk about David over the next few weeks, and he will frequently disappoint us, just like we frequently disappoint each other and ourselves. Because David, for all of his profound connection with God, was every bit as human as you and me, as prone to frailty and faults as you and me. And we look at his story not to look down on David, but we look to his story to say, what is it that we can take from this? Why is it in Scripture for us? And it's there for lots of reasons, but the reason that I came up with this time was to remind us that we are not the only thing that matters, that we are not the sole decision maker about our lives, and that we're not the fount of all wisdom for ourselves. Give up autonomy and embrace community, because that's where you'll find yourself. That's where you'll become all of those things you can become. When people see the strengths and the values in you that you don't even know are there, and they see the weaknesses that you don't know are there, and then shore them up and turn them into strengths. Even if I could be autonomous, I wouldn't want to. I need people too much. It took me a while to come to that realization. When I was younger, I lived in this same mythic world where I was all on my own. Even if I could, I wouldn't now. Because it's people, just like you and you, who have made me who I am now and who are helping me become more and more who I was created to be, and I'm grateful for that. And that's what it is for all of us. But we won't be able to embrace that until we release this idea that we don't need each other and that we can do it all ourselves. Amen.